Thanks, Amit. I want to thank the organizers for giving me this opportunity. It's nice to see so many familiar, smiling faces. This is joint work with Leo Gibas and Quentin Mérigot, who is sitting there in the audience and suspecting something. So we've seen a lot of talks throughout the week, and a few talks throughout the week and earlier today, and quite a few people in the audience are interested in using topology for inferring information about the shape. And the way people, a convenient framework for reasoning about the shapes is using distance functions. So Fred and Steve talked a little bit about it this morning, and we've seen some talks on Monday and then throughout the week. Now, the distance function framework is great for describing shapes, describing the geometry of the shapes, but it suffers from a problem that it's robust with respect to Hausdorff noise if we are sampling some kind of a compact set. But if there are outliers, if there is some kind of more general Gaussian noise, for example, then things fall apart very quickly. So today I will talk about how to cope with the, in this framework with more general models of noise. So real quickly, distance function. So if we have a compact set K sitting in RD, then the distance function, we just at every point of RD, we record the distance to the closest point in our compact set. So anytime we talk about, you know, medial axis, Voronoi diagrams, flow complex, we're really talking about different properties of this function. So it's familiar to all of you. And one of the reasons why this function is easy to work with and convenient to work with is that if now we have a point sample P of this compact set that is close to it in the Hausdorff sense, then the distance function to the point set is going to be close to the distance function to the compact set. So, you know, if the distance to the compact set at point X is roughly the same as the distance to the point set. And one more thing that is extremely convenient about distance functions is that if we want to represent their represent information about them globally, so for example their sublevel sets, we can do this very, very efficiently because the sublevel sets of these functions are actually unions of balls, unions of convex sets. And so in particular now we can take, you know, the nerve and define the Czech complex, talk about alpha shapes, Vittori strips. So the point is that if we're not just interested in point-wise definition of the function, but some kind of a global representation, the fact that it's unions of convex sets is extremely convenient. And this is a property that we will revisit later. And I think it's no coincidence that the first paper that talks about persistence builds things on top of alpha shapes because it allows it to represent distance functions globally. And the problem that I alluded to in my first slide is that if we have now a single outlier, then suddenly the distance function jumps by a lot, right? The functional value here was large because the distance was high to the compact set, but now it suddenly becomes zero. So in this talk, we will move into a slightly different framework. Instead of talking about compact sets, we'll talk about probability distributions on the Euclidean space. Instead of point sets, or we will think of point sets as placing a uniform measure on the point set, so every point gets the weight 1 over the number of points. Instead of reasoning about Hausdorff distance, we'll talk about Wasserstein distance, which is the cost of the optimal transport plan between two measures. So if we take one measure and another, and we want to transport one of them into the other, what is the cheapest way to do so? So to work with this framework, I guess the paper came out this year maybe, but the preprint came out a couple of years ago. There was absolutely beautiful work by Fred Chazal, who spoke just before me, David Kornsteiner, and Quentin Mérigot on distance to the measure. They somehow distilled all the properties that people use for topology inference, for geometric reconstruction, why distance functions behave like the distance functions, into these two properties. They call a function distance-like if it's one Lipschitz and if it's one semiconcave, meaning that if you lift it onto the paraboloid, that the graph is going to be convex. And they defined, this really means that d is a power distance. And they defined a function that they call distance to a measure in the following way. So this may look a little bit confusing, but we will revisit this in some examples in a second. They take this delta, which is the radius of the smallest ball that contains enough mass, so for some parameter m. So if this is my point x, and this is my measure, and this is mass m, then delta of mu m at x is going to be the radius of this ball. And now they integrate the squared radius from 0 to m0, where m0 is some parameter, and normalize it by 1 over m0. And this function has wonderful properties. So first of all, it's distance-like, so it's a power distance. Second, it's close to the support of the measure. So if the measure is supported on some kind of a compact set, then the and we take a uniform, if the measure is supported on the compact set, then the distance, the ordinary distance function to the compact set and the distance to this measure is going to be close. And finally, this distance function is stable. So if we have two measures that are close in the Wasserstein sense, then the distances to these measures are going to be close. So it's probably easier if we go through an example of how you would use such a thing. So if we have a compact set K, we have a distance function to this K, which we sort of all know how to work with, and we take now a volume measure mu on this compact set K, the distance function to K, the ordinary one, and to mu K are going to be close. Now, if we, instead of taking the uniform measure on K, we're going to convolve this measure with, for example, a Gaussian, so now we're going to spread it throughout this, the plane, we can bound the Wasserstein distance between the measure supported on K and this convolved measure. And so now the distance function to the measure supported on K and to this new measure, they're also going to be close. And now if we draw a point set from this from the measure mu and take a uniform measure on P, then as we sample more and more points, the Wasserstein distance between mu and the uniform measure on the point cloud is going to go to zero as we get more and more points. So as a result, so all of these distances between the distance function, so the distance function to the compact set and to the measure on this compact, to the volume measure on the compact set, we can bound the distance between the measure on the compact set and the convolved measure. And then finally, bound the difference between the distance function to this measure and to the uniform measure on the point set. And the point is that so now this distance function, right, the distance function that is the distance to the uniform measure on the compact set is something we can compute very concretely. So it's because if we're given a compact set. And as a result, we can infer information about some hidden compact set K that we actually want to know from this point sample. So let's go back to the definition that of the distance function and of the distance to the measure in the case where our measure is uniform on the point set. So if we take P to be the point set, and now we take the measure to be the sum of the Dirac masses on this point set, then if we just rewrite the definition of the distance to this measure, then what do we get? Well, the radius of a ball that contains some amount m of the measure is really if m is greater than k than you know k over n but less than k plus 1 over n, then it's really the radius of the ball the radius of the ball that contains k nearest neighbors, the smallest ball that contains k plus 1 nearest neighbors of my point x. So this guy is really the so as we integrate now from 0 to m naught, if we write m naught as k over n, then really the distance to this uniform measure on the point cloud is going to be the mean square distance of the distances to the k nearest neighbors of the point x. So it's just you know two lines of writing, and this in the case where we're talking about the distance to the uniform measure, we will call this just to stop saying to make it shorter, we will call this a k distance. This definition is great. It's a point-wise definition, so we know how to evaluate this function at a point. But if we now wanted to do some kind of inference, or if we wanted to construct to represent entire sublevel sets of this function, then this is kind of hard to work with. So we would like to understand this a little bit better, to make it more manageable. For this, we need one more definition, that of a power distance. So if we have a weighted set of points, so point P with the weights WP, then the power distance from P to X is defined to be Euclidean distance squared minus this weight. And the geometric intuition, if the weight is positive, then it's really, if we draw a ball of radius square root of the weight, then it's the length of the tangent from X to this ball. And in our case, the weights will be negative, So we can think of this as we take our point set in RD, we lift it into RD plus 1 by the square root of the negative of the weight, and now this point set induces a distance function on RD, and that's the distance function we're going to be working with. The reason that power distances sort of have been considered in computational geometry for a while, sorry, and if we have a collection of points, then the distance function at x is going to be just the minimum over all such, over taking over all the points. The reason that people have considered, or the reason that power distances are useful and interesting is that, one of the many reasons is that, first of all, their sublevel sets are going to be unions of balls. So again, you know, convex sets. And moreover, if you define an analog of a Voronoi diagram, so if we partition the Euclidean space into regions where by which point is in our point set is the closest, we're going to get decomposition into convex cells, much like the ordinary Voronoi diagram. So it turns out that we can rewrite the k distance as a power distance. So if we take a point x and we're interested in the distance to the uniform measure on some point cloud p, then with you know three lines of algebra we can write it as follows: if we take c to be the set of k nearest neighbors of x, and we take c bar to be the barycenter of these points, then if we it turns out that sort of you can verify it, but that the squared distance k distance is going to be the power distance to this barycenter, where the weight of the barycenter is going to be mean square distance from the barycenter to the points that define it. And so now there are n choose k barycenters in total. Only those of them that are really barycenters of some k points that are nearest k nearest neighbors of some point in RD matter. So we can write the k distance as really a minimum. Either we take it over all and choose k barycenters, or we can only take those barycenters that are nearest k nearest neighbors of some point in RD. Now this is already great in the sense that this already allows us to represent the sublevel sets of the k distance function globally. If we take all of these barycenters and now we draw balls of the appropriate radius around them, then suddenly we get the sublevel set of the k-distance function. The only problem is that this is an unpleasantly large number. As in, if you wanted to actually compute with this, this would be sort of a no-starter. So we would like to somehow take care of this complexity. And to get a better sense of what the sort of how high the complexity is, we need to recall some work on order k Voronoi diagrams. Just to remind you, so if we take the Voronoi diagram, it's a partition of the domain of the Euclidean plane in this case into regions where in every cell we have the same nearest neighbor. So this every point in this cell is going to have this point as its nearest neighbor. But now we can also define an order two Voronoi diagram where we will partition the plane into RG into regions where within each cell, every point has the same two nearest neighbors. So if we can think of this as we can extend this Voronoi cell, pretend that this point didn't exist, this cell would extend up to here. And so within this little region, the two nearest neighbors are this point and this point. Right? Here it's this point and this point. And vice versa, we can extend this cell into here. And so in this little set, this is the order two Voronoi cell where every point here, its two nearest neighbors are these two points. And we can sort of iterate this construction. So this is order two Voronoi diagram, order three Voronoi diagram, and so forth. The cells remain convex, but their number sort of grows. And in particular, it's known from computational geometry that the complexity of these diagrams is n to the d over 2 times k to the d over 2. Although in a slightly different setting than ours, but the moral of the story is that there are very many of these cells, and remember that each cell really gives us a point in the barycenter that we have to store in order to do anything, which is obnoxiously large number of points. So we would like to approximate, to do something to store fewer points. And so we do a very simple approximation scheme. We, for every point x in our point cloud, we're going to find its k-nearest or k-1 nearest neighbors, and we're going to take a barycenter C with appropriate weight of these k-1 nearest neighbors together with x. And we're going to store the set, and this is going to be the point, the set of barycenters that we're going to work with. And this has very simple interpretation. We're only storing those barycenters that have, so each barycenter corresponds to some order k Voronoi cell, and we're going to store only those that have a point of our original point cloud inside of their order k Voronoi cell. So, you know, this point is going to give us some number of, it's going to have some k nearest neighbors. We're going to take their barycenter, and that's the point that we're going to store. And we're going to iterate this construction and get a set of barycenters. And there are weights that I'm not showing because, well, that would require some more drawing skills. So the question is, how good of an approximation do we get? Because we're now using a smaller set of barycenters than we would need to represent the function exactly. But the question is, how good? So we will get an error, but how much of an error do we get? So first of all, it's possible to state a very general bound. So first of all, we know that this is when the distance function or the power distance to this set of barycenters we're going to call witness k distance. And that's our construction. And I will denote this by GWPK. It's going to be the witness k distance, so defined to the smaller set of barycenters, and GPK is going to be the k distance defined to the full set of barycenters. Well, first of all, the witness k distance is never going to be smaller, just because we're taking minimum over smaller, over fewer barycenters. And it's possible to show a very general bound that says that the witness k distance is never going to be more than twice as large three times as large as the true k distance. And it's a very simple argument that's a couple of triangle inequalities that I don't think I'm going to go through. The multiplicative bound is great. It's very nice that it works in a very general setting, but usually from inference results, if you wanted to infer the shape from a persistence diagram, it's we need the stability theorems are phrased in terms of additive bound. So we'd like to improve this. We cannot do it in general, but we will do it in a special setting that I mentioned earlier, namely the setting where we have a compact and L-dimensional compact set K. We have a uniform volume measure in it. Now we will take a nearby measure that's close in the Wasserstein sense, and now we're going to draw a set of points from this measure. So in this particular setting, we can get a slightly better bound, much better bound, and in particular the following theorem, that the uniform distance between the witness k distance and the distance to this compact set k that we are, so imagine you're in a setting that there is some kind of a hidden compact set k which you are sampling with noise, and you really want to infer information about its geometry. So this distance function is capturing the geometry of this compact set. This is the witness k distance that we can actually get our hands on, because it's compact and we can compute it easily. And the difference between these two functions is going to have this form, which looks a little bit confusing, but it's helpful to compare it to the original, to the true k distance, to the real distance to the measure. And what I want to point out is that we're off by some constants, right? So this term, I guess I want to remind you, comes from the error that you get from moving from the distance to the compact set to the measure, to the uniform measure on it. And this is the term that you get from the fact that you are not working with the real measure, but rather from a point sample. This theorem is not difficult to prove. Maybe I just give a hint. So the lower bound is very simple, since the witness k distance can only be larger than the true k distance. So this bound we get straight from the real k distance, and the upper bound requires us to bound the number of the radius of a ball that contains k points of our point set. And once we bound that, and sort of this term is going to look like this, but without the three and with four there. And then once we have that, then again it's just a couple of triangle inequalities. We can bound the witness k distance on a point y that lies in our compact set k, and then we can minimize the distance to every other point where triangle inequalities by taking infimum of all points y in the compact set. I think I'm slowly running out of time, so I'm going to let me skip. This is already a very convenient bound, and you can work with it in practice. The only somewhat unsatisfying term in it is this Wasserstein distance between the measure on the set on the compact set K and the uniform measure on the point cloud. And we would like to be able, sort of, if you want to talk in some kind of a statistical setting, you would like to be able to say how fast this quantity goes to zero, how fast it decreases, and we have statements along these lines which I will not go through in detail. But the point is, I guess I want to point out that you can make statements about how fast this Wasserstein distance decreases, or the probability with which it will get small enough, and it sort of, as we get more and more points, the probability that it gets smaller than something increases exponentially. So this is the convergence statement. Okay, so maybe I show an example of what this all means. So here's the point set that I've been showing all along, right? So here's our compact set K. We took a uniform measure on it, convolved it with a Gaussian, draw a bunch of point samples from it. So if you've worked with distance functions, you'll recognize that inferring the shape of this infinity, or sideways figure eight, from these point samples is rather complicated. But now if we take the witness K distance and take its sublevel set, it looks like this. So the gray is the sublevel set of the witness K distance. The black is the sublevel set of the true K distance. And so the point is that while you work with, you know, only linear number of barycenters, which is what you see in gray, versus, you know, exponentially many and to the d barycenters in the black case, you get roughly the same picture, which, well, I think is very nice. And you know, you can see the two holes and all that, right? While here this would have been rather hard to do. Okay, K, I will come back in a second. It was 50 over 6,000, which it's kind of surprising, right? So let me get back. Vin asks a great question, right? How do you choose this parameter K? So let me get back to it. So a couple of remarks. The fact that we are working with the power distance means that we can construct check complexes, alpha shapes, strips complexes, so all the usual constructions that we're used to working with and know how to compute, but we only have to work with a linear number of points. That's the point of this witness construction. Second, I want to point out is that sort of a dirty little secret of what we do in this field is that we cannot work with too many points. We don't have algorithms that are good enough to work with, you know, a million points. So what we have to do is we have to subsample, and what we usually do. If you try to sort of, if you have outliers, if you have some kind of crazy noise, and you try to subsample the points directly, you immediately, so for example, if you wanted to do a max min sub something, so take the furthest point from what you already have, you will pick out exactly the outliers, which is extremely inconvenient. On the other hand, as soon as you switched from your point cloud to this witness barycenters, then now all you have to do is you have to minimize the error that you get from the subsample that you're working with, which means that now somehow the outliers have disappeared for you, and you can just worry about approximating the distance function as best as you can. And the final remark, so Vin asked, how do you choose this parameter M0, because everything depends on it, and topology can help here in the following way. So if we take a distance function, so if we vary this parameter K or M0 continuously, then this distance to the measure, and as well as the witness K distance, is going to change continuously. So what we can do is we can compute the persistence diagram for every K, for K equal 1 or something, and then start to continuously increase it. And as we do this, since the function is changing continuously, so will its persistence diagram, and now we can just plot these persistences as we vary M0, And this is the picture for the point cloud that I showed you earlier. And so you can see that in the beginning there is lots of noise because you haven't sort of got a chance to smooth things nice enough. But then the two classes corresponding to the two holes, so this is one-dimensional persistence diagrams, they become very prominent. And you can now pick, so the M node that I picked is this one. So you can sort of make an informed choice of your parameter. So the take-home message that I have for you is that if you're working with distance functions, you can extend your results from compact sets to, you know, probability measures without blowing up the complexity of the point cloud that you're working on. So thanks.